This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
This is a very happy crowd. That makes me feel really good. All the smiles and laughter, couldn't even get it shut down. That's a good sign. I'm sorry to shut it down. Feels a little bad to me. It's really good to see people interested in teenagers, adolescents. Some talk to me about this as if they're something to be afraid of. They're not, actually. They're human beings. They're all right. In fact, I guess I've given my life work to adolescents. My preferred grade, I've taught grades 1 to 12, classes in grades 1 to 12, somewhere in my career. But I've always been in 7th and 8th grade. That's my preferred grade. There's reasons for it. I think they're a lovely gift for all of us. I think today we could agree that these are really challenging times to parent or to be in kids club ministries. And I wish there's a lot of different reasons why you're here. And I'm not sure how I'm supposed to bring this disparate group together and then try to talk about reaching the adolescent heart. But what I would like for you to do is to do the hard work of translation. If you're a parent, think about how it applies. So I'm a parent of 5. In fact, we have twins that are almost 16 and an 18-year-old son, 2-year-old daughter and 23-year-old son. And so I speak out of that probably too, right? I speak out of a school experience, and I had the privilege of working with young people in a juvenile detention center and being the person they would call when they needed to be de-escalated in those terms in the penal system because they were suicidal. So I've had sort of this mix, and so I don't know what I'm speaking out of, something along all of those lines. And so I just want you to translate it, I guess. I don't know how to meet all of you exactly where you're at. The world scene right now is really chaotic. And the nation's scene is pretty chaotic. In fact, you can't even talk to each other hardly anymore without yelling at each other, it seems like. The local scene has plenty of challenge in it. Most of our communities are struggling with technology, smartphones, social media has created interesting scenarios that have confused everyone and change the ways that we communicate and live with each other. Now, for adults, it's hard enough. But think about teenagers trying to find their way through this. And there have been times, I'll just say this, that I think our teens are doing better with some of these issues than the adults in their life. So, if you're looking for me to somehow put teens in their place, I'm sorry. I find them actually thinking about some things. Not all of them, but they're thinking about their phones and how to use them and when to shut them off better than the 40 and 50-year-old crowd. But it is a confusing and scary time. And we evidently believe in adolescence. We keep having children. They grow up and they become that. And so we actually think they're pretty great, and it's worth navigating those years. But is it not also true that the world that they're growing up in right now is different from the world you grew up in? And that presents certain challenges. We have experienced similar things to these young people, but it feels like their experience has been supercharged. Okay? They're not different from us, but they've been supercharged. So, how do we grow teens when they are a child but not a child? When they have a desperate desire to be an adult but they aren't an adult? When they want freedoms but can't handle too many of them all at once? This is the challenge. But God knew what he was doing. He designed the growing up process. He really did. It's okay with him that they grow up. And here's what I want to say. Adolescents need us, and we need them. And so it is worth investing significantly in young people, even when they're confused. A letter from a student a number of years ago. I wanted to tell you this, but I just can't. Remember when I told you this was a 10th grade girl? Remember when I told you that I thought it was going to be impossible to change the way things are at home, and you said it wasn't? Well, I'm not telling you that it is. The only changes that will ever, double underlined, take place is that everything will just get worse. It has already started, and they will just keep keeping on. There are also lots of things you don't know. You probably figured that out by now. I will tell you some of them. I hate the situation I'm in. I fear being killed every day by my so-called father. I've been doing everything that I can think of to improve my situation. My dad and mom are both liars and adulterers. They both drink. My mom smokes and does drugs. She lets so-and-so and so-and-so, her brother and sister, smoke and drink. My whole family thinks I'm stupid for being who I am. There's too many things I've been praying. It's just not working. All the praying and talking in the world is not going to help. You don't have to bother with this anymore. Thanks for what you have done. Is there confusion out there? Confusion brought on by the adults in their life. By living in certain ways that don't compel young people to even want to follow. Confusion. Lots of confusion. There's turmoil. There's angst. And I'd like to talk with you about four keys that I think are timeless. They're not just for this time, but it's always been this way. I don't bring you anything new, but I want to reinforce several concepts. The four keys I'm looking at today are presence, compassion, boundaries, and accountability. We were created in relationship. We were created for relationship. God has always desired to be in our presence. God loves it when we want to be in his presence. And God has been reaching out to humans for millennia. God is seeking his people. He wants to be present with them. And presence is powerful. If we are going to reach adolescence, we need presence. Now, when I ask my wife over here, what's one of the keys, the first thing she said was presence. Presence. It's also one of the toughest parts of living life is presence. Presence doesn't mean just sort of being in the same area. There's that. That's good and healthy. But it's more than that. It's being with them. And in today's era, it is hard to be really present with our young people, whether you're a parent or whether you're a school teacher or whether you're in ministry with kids club. Doesn't matter. All those things. It's a struggle. But here, maybe I just want to say that young people need present heroes and example. Our actions, when we are present with our young people, speak louder than money or gifts we might give them. We have so many heroes. I still remember a day in school when I opened up a locker and right inside the door was a picture, a big one, of Dennis Rodman. That dates me. He was a professional basketball player from somewhere back in some other century. But he lived a horrible, lifestyle. Absolutely debased. He was a wicked man. But he was celebrated. And I open this locker, there's a picture of Dennis Rodman looking at me. I mean, we had some things to work with, right? But here's what I realized. Dennis Rodman, a hero in my school. Well, who were his real heroes? How does Dennis Rodman sneak into school and on a door, a locker door? What's that about? It is easy to have heroes we don't know. We don't really know. It's much more difficult to have heroes, to be a hero, to be the example that young people need, that are present with them. You need more than just you to raise your children. I'll back that up in case that was too offensive. I need more. There's a reason I send my children to a Christian school. And the primary reason is because I don't think my wife and I have what it takes to raise our children well enough. I need help. I need other people. I need them to have heroes, people they look up to, people who model what I hope for my children, to be with them. For them to become the heroes, where the supper discussion is not the current TikTok hero, but their teachers, their minister, that middle-aged man that always says hi and comes up after church right to the youth group area and mingles with them. Presence. They need those heroes. Not a third-party, digital, impersonal hero. And I actually think this group has what it takes to be a hero and an example for young people. But you're going to have to engage with presence. There's a cost. Presence helps us to build relationships. And sometimes we think we have to be perfect adults in their lives. The problem is, that's the wrong focus. Rather than thinking about being perfect and getting it all right and reading just the right books and doing everything just so, the real issue is to get present with your children. Mark Iaconelli, in a book about youth ministry, says, "Study after study in the field of youth development makes it clear that the single most important thing that can make a positive difference in the life of a young person is the presence of a caring adult." If I were to reflect on my life and who mattered to me, I can tell you something. I went through stages just like most of you did where you had heroes that maybe weren't the kind you were real proud of now, okay? But I can tell you my heroes now, and you don't even know them. People like Arlen Nisley. He was in the youth group. He was about, 8 years older than me. Boy, he pushed around on me. You talk about discipleship on steroids. That was him. I mean, he would. Why do you believe that? What's that about? He was a mentor. He's present. Titus Nisley. He taught Sunday school class for a group of guys in church for years. Kind of would follow us. And we always knew, and this was the highlight, he would take us camping in the cow pasture. You know what? For a group of guys, it's amazing. You would look forward to that. It was the coolest thing ever to go to the cow pasture and have a camp out. Weren't too many trees in Kansas, they say, so you had to find a place. And that was where we'd go. I want to remind us that presence makes a difference, and we see that through the life of Jesus. Jesus wasn't a distant God who spoke to people he didn't understand or didn't want to understand. He didn't stand outside of the world in which we live and speak into it. He became flesh and dwelt among us, being tempted in all ways as we are, even experiencing the physical and emotional limitations we do. Jesus wasn't a person of lovely words alone and verbose language to people with a lack of regard for their circumstances. He spoke out of a compassion for where they were at right then. And he did it with grace and mercy toward their failings. And so it is from presence that real ministry takes place. Part of it's being available. Just being able to listen to adolescents, to entering their world, to thinking about how it would be to be them. Have you ever done that? If this was you, how would you respond to what's going on in your world? I think it's also a really important thing that my wife does better than I do in talking about our own struggles and weaknesses as we raise our children, as we minister to children. You know, I know something about that. It looks a little different, but it's the same thing. And we tell some of those stories. We let them know we don't have it all right either. We didn't have it all right either, but we're here with them. Now, I'll just say a few things here. The issue of what do we do together? Do any of you all find yourself in a situation with its kids ministry? It could be parenting at home. What do we do together when we're together? Does that ever cross? Like, what do we do? What would they like? Oh, that's boring. So let me just say a few things about that. It's not as important what we do together, but that we do it together. So for me, working at Faith Builders, one of the things that we committed ourselves to years ago is that it's going to be a family project, not just dad's project. It's not just dad's ministry. It's all of us. And so when we have Teachers Week, we host events. Who is washing dishes? Yep, my children. They're a part of what's going on. They're participating. So really, presence is informal and formal. It's things like recess with students. It's things like washing dishes or cleaning the house together. You see, if what presence means is we do this really great vacation, if that's what we think presence will be and will mean the most, you have missed the mark. Those are great anchors. 5 years ago, we took the family out west in a camper, and it was a close experience. And we refer back to that over and over. But I'm telling you, that trip would not have been as good if we hadn't been practicing some presence before that. Would have gotten on everyone else's last nerve. There have been some real come to Jesus moments than there were. You see, it's daily life together that meets young people. Giving time and energy is really important to teenagers. Our students, our young people, our children don't really need adults to talk at them. They more need adults to be present with them. They need caring adults who want to enter into their world and understand where they are and what they're struggling with so they can walk alongside. You know, sometimes, my mom, when I was growing up, my mom thought school was really important. And I went to public school the first 8 years of my life, and notice I'm in a Christian school administrator now. There's a reason. But I went to public school. But, you know, my mom, I don't know that she ever missed one of my games, in softball or basketball. I don't know that she ever missed the spelling bees. She ever missed any presentation the class did. It was like she'd just show up over and over. And certain stages of my life, I was kind of wishing maybe she wouldn't see the necessity. I didn't think it was necessary. Like, I'm fine. I appreciate that. Thanks, Mom, for coming. I felt a little bit sometimes like, yeah, that's my mom. But I like her. But, you know, yes, sir. Some distance. Listen, when I look back now, think about this. What do I say about that? And sometimes we are so cowed and kind of buckle under what we hear teenagers say rather than what they actually believe, which is not the same thing as what they say. Second key, I can tell I'm not going fast enough, is compassion. There once was a remarkable teacher, one of the greatest the world has ever known. He broke down and wept when brought face to face with the confusion and unhappiness that afflicted those who came to hear his teachings. Matthew reports of Jesus, when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. You've often heard it. People don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. So that little cliche actually has something to say to us. Compassion, though, is not just feelings of, I'm so sorry. It goes deeper than that. About 22, 3 years ago, I hadn't thought about Matt. Matt wrote me a note. He was a 7th grader who couldn't keep his life put together. That was the understatement of the year. Like, locker was a disaster. Books lost and missing, and the exterior of everything had wrinkles and problems, and he never could remember to do the tests and to study for the tests and his homework. He was always so sincere and so sweet. But he wrote this to me one morning, had a picture of himself here crying. And he said, I tried, Mr. Miller. I tried. I need prayer, Mr. Miller. I need prayer. I'm reading this. I need prayer, Mr. Miller. I need prayer. Please give me another chance this week. I still got to give you vocabs and take a test in science this week. Matt. What do you do with that? Well, your heart goes into a puddle to start with. What do you do with these things that come up? You see, but compassion is not just what he wrote. Compassion has to do with a reaction to what this young man, what the direction he's actually going. Because if he doesn't pull his life together, which is kind of a life skill, life will be very difficult for him. And so we care about more than just the vocabs and the messiness. We actually need to start thinking about, well, maybe compassion is caring about what young people don't know. And young people don't know what they don't know. That's why they know so much. But young people don't have the tools of the adults around them. And so we then don't despise the inner chaos that takes place, their inability to see clearly. But rather help them see themselves and the world as it really is. We aren't scornful and condescending of these children. And I'll admit, that can be a struggle. If you work with children every day, there are moments of cynicism, to be clear. Can I just say that? That's a confession. I'm not proud of it. I'm just saying that's the reality. And there are actually years that don't go well. You say, why am I even trying? It makes no difference. But young people need to feel our empathy. They need, when Jesus was moved with compassion, that meant literally to eat the inner organs. Good thing it's not lunchtime yet. It's similar to our expression of eat your heart out. And so there's a reaction to the difficulty around us from the inside. We actually find ourselves thinking about them and saying, what would that be like? How can I actually help them, work with them? I want to very, very quickly, and I'm not going to spend as much time here as I had planned to, but I'd like to talk a little bit about the compassion then. Just several ideas about working with young people, what compassion looks like. I think compassion requires first that we know who our young people are. If you don't have relationship and connection with them, even parents, it's interesting. My oldest son, we didn't talk a lot about, what the career path is going to be, letting things kind of play out. And he had part-time jobs, summertime jobs. And one day he came to me and said, I'd like to go to school. I want to be a teacher. You say, what? We had never discussed that. I'd made a commitment that my children don't need to do what I did, that they're never going to feel pressure from me. And I actually felt bad later because I didn't even know that was in him that deeply. That he's willing to go to school to be a teacher. I didn't know that side of my son. Do you know your sons? Do you know who they really are? When we know who they are, we understand how they're made up, what makes them tick, and what's going on. We aren't all cut out of the same cloth. And so what works here and what is compassion here is not necessarily compassion over here. Secondly, compassion is identifying with the difficulties but not giving young people a pass. Just because we identify with the hard stuff doesn't mean that we give them a pass and make it, I know it's hard. I know you're hurting. We won't expect anything of you. Tell you what, you ought to go talk to Bald Eagle or Allegheny and Chiefs. That's not how it works, is it, Sheldon? You don't get a pass. You got to work through your problems. You love them through it, but you can't give them. Compassion is not giving people a pass because that's not what they need. We don't deny the hard things, but we work with them in their struggle. Making things easier for young people by adjusting our expectations of them downward is actually condescending to them, not compassion. We don't go to the lowest common denominator so that they can kind of feel better about themselves. There's times when young people need to feel kind of bad about themselves and where they're at. They need to face themselves. That's done in presence and in working alongside them and tremendous compassion, but we don't lower what they can become. That's not loving them. Compassion makes approval enjoyable and correction palatable. It's a dance between approval and correction, I find. You praise a child in the middle of a group, they feel like $1 million. You rebuke them in public, it's humiliation for them, and it's tough. We need to protect young people's dignity and self-respect. That allows them to feel your approval. It also allows them to be okay with the correction. Compassion requires avoiding favoritism. Doesn't mean that we do everything the same for each young person that we're responsible for. It's not that at all. But we can't have favorites. If your compassion is all for one person, it will not be seen as compassion. It will be seen as favoritism. In what I do, we call that a teacher's pet. Compassion is a steady devotion to each young person's future. Young people don't naturally look far into the future. You ever notice that? I know it's a real shock. But they don't, actually. They are thinking about, well, can I go play volleyball tonight? Well, do you have your homework done? Well, it'll only take 20 minutes. You ever hear that? 20. I see. They don't look very far into the future. They're in the moment. But that's part of growing up. And that's why there's adults. That's why you have responsibility. And there is, as we look at young people, we see not who they currently are, but who they are going to be. And we should have a steady commitment and devotion to every young person's future. If all the adults in our young people's lives would take a look at this in terms of what's best for them in the long haul, it would make a big difference how they actually live their life. All right, the clock moves faster than I am. Boundaries. Boundaries. In our current culture, boundaries have been given a bad rap. Self-expression is celebrated. Independence is considered a high priority and value. Teenagers think they want no boundaries, and parents and authorities, those working with teens, would rather not enforce boundaries. It'll all come out in the wash. They're such good people at heart. They don't mean to. This is a tough one. Boundaries is a tough one. But reaching the heart of adolescence means that we establish boundaries around our young people. It is not easy. So in our house, we don't have Snapchat. If you do, I'm not making a statement. But I'll tell you why. Snapchat is meant for something to come in that disappears. And yes, you can screenshot it and all these things. But it is intended to push us toward something other than what we want our young people, I think, to be pushed toward. Anonymity. I can quick send it. It's gone. No one will know. No trace. Everything's good. And just that possibility creates potential problems. I talked to one school minister who said, the biggest problem in my school right now is Snapchat. It's the chatting after school that's a problem. So in our house, I decided, well, there's wisdom in that. We don't have Snapchat. Do you think my children, lovely as they are, have ever pushed me around on that? Oh, good. Such confidence you have in my... Of course they have pushed me around. No social media accounts, you know? My children start wondering, well, will I even get a flip phone when I'm 20? They get a phone when they're 16. But listen, boundaries. I'm going to say something here. I don't think our children right now, have enough boundaries. I'm glad we expect so much of them, that we care about them, that we want them to grow up, and so we give them independence and all these things, but we give it before it's time. Two ideas. Boundaries allow young people to feel cared for. There is safety and security for young people when they know what's appropriate, they know where they stand, and they know where the lines are at. Young people are uncertain about who they are, the way they're perceived, who they're becoming. They hardly know which way to turn sometimes. Life is really confusing. So giving them curfews is not the worst thing in the world. There's actually plenty of study that shows that the brain is not fully developed at the age of 15 and 16 and 17. We won't go into the medical side of this, but it's true. And so we do our students a favor. We do our young people a favor when we give them parameters, boundaries. We don't allow inappropriate outbursts. It's interesting. Here's a letter from a young man. The other day, when you told us to go to work, I said, "How do you do that?" Then you told me to tell you, "How do you do that?" I didn't really know what to say, so I said nothing. Asking that question was wrong for me to do, and I ask your forgiveness for it. I don't want to start the year off wrong. That was about the second day of school. Good point, young man. Here's the thing. He actually knew the boundary. He knew he stepped over. He knew it. But how do you do that? It was an offhanded comment, right? But there's boundaries in relationships. And my good man, I am a teddy bear. Don't tell my students this. I'm a teddy bear. They perceive me as, you don't ever want to talk to the principal because of stuff. But I'm actually a teddy bear underneath all that. But here's the thing. I found that children flourish under boundaries. When they know where they're at, they know who they are, they know what's appropriate. And somehow he knew that was not respectful, and I'm going to make that one right, so I'm not on the wrong side of this thing. You see, they actually want boundaries, and they're willing to talk about the boundaries. And you can talk about that then with them. Our young people will tell us that these boundaries are ridiculous, that they are not helpful, that no one else has to do that. And when your children say that, here's what I'd encourage you to do. I would encourage you to go to other parents and ask, "Well, how do you do this?" "Dad, no one has 11 o'clock curfew." "Nobody." "Okay. So what time's your curfew?" 10:30. "Okay, good." 11? 10? "Oh." So it's not quite what it seems like after all. But in their mind, because one other person has a curfew, doesn't have a curfew, that probably means everybody doesn't have a curfew. It's actually not that way. Boundaries. Boundaries enable informed and sound decisions. Young people are not as adept at making good decisions as they lead themselves to believe that they are. Young people actually need more guidance than what we tend to want to give them. So, let me give you a scenario. This has happened to me many times, so I'll just use it as a case in point. Eighth grader comes to me and says, "Mr. Miller, I'm probably going to be dropping out this year." "Oh, really? You're going to be dropping out after eighth grade? So why? We have high school, but..." "Well, I want to get a job, and I'm just tired of it." And I said, "Well, let me talk to your parents." So I call up my parent and say, "So I'm just curious. I just want to connect with you directly. Is this true?" "Well, what we decided was that they can make their own decision whether or not they're going to go through high school." Now, if that's the way you approach it, forgive me. But in my school administrator hat, let me put it on for a moment, my heart drops down to my shoes. Here's why. What 14-year-old do you know can make that kind of life-altering decision without the guidance of parents? I'm not saying you have to go through high school. I'm saying for you to make that choice and then do this. And this has happened to me. "Well, my dad said if he doesn't have to pay tuition, he'll buy me a truck if I drop out." I lost my words. Young people need boundaries to help them know where to go. They aren't actually capable of making those kinds of decisions. There's some they can, some they can't. The adults in their life need to help them get there. Boundaries include saying both yes and no. Just as doors are meant to be opened and closed. Teens spell boundaries like this: rules. Deep down, teens spell it L-O-V-E. That's true. Young people actually want boundaries. And finally, accountability in the next 2 minutes here. Boundaries aren't the end of the story. You can set boundaries, but if you hold nobody accountable, then what? The boundaries do no good. Boundaries without accountability create cynicism in young people. If you have a boundary, you say one thing, but you don't actually make that happen. You know how easy it is. You're not going to go to volleyball for the next 2 weeks. And about a week later, may I please go to volleyball? And then you cave in. Folks, be careful what you say before you say it, because you should hold them accountable and you should be held accountable for what you said. And so accountability is about doing, meaning what we say, actually. Testing boundaries is normal for young people. It is. I think it's one of the hardest parts of parenting, of working with children, is keeping them accountable. So just a few quick ideas. Maintain empathy. It's important that in accountability, grace accompanies truth. Okay? It's not just all about the boundary. It is about grace and truth, both. Secondly, we allow for natural consequences. Teens should face their natural consequences of their decisions. They should. You have to decide which ones they should face and which ones they shouldn't. And we don't bail them out when it gets hard. I just talked with somebody here yesterday whose son was in my classroom. The second year I was teaching, it was a tough year, and in very short, they were throwing eraser bits. I walked out of the classroom. 30 seconds later, there was eraser bits over the entire classroom floor. I was like, and all the books I read didn't tell me what to do about it either. And so I prayed and had no good answers. And wouldn't you know, after a bit, I still didn't know. And I dismissed them for recess. And I said, I want these six people to stay with me. And I still didn't know what I was going to do. And so I looked at them, and they looked at me. We had a nice little exchange of looks. And the Holy Spirit gave me an idea. I walked down the office, and I grabbed those pink erasers, and I cut it in half, and cut three of those in half, and gave one to each student, and said, here, you enjoy erasers. You love erasers. You must have a relationship with them. I'll help you. So I want you to erase this eraser during recesses until it's all gone to the size that you threw. We call that a natural consequence. Three of them. Next week, three eraser bits. I gave them a whole one. That one worked me over. Empathy. Because they had blisters. You know how long it takes? A pink pearl eraser gets hot and it doesn't erase after a while. So you have to let it cool down. Turn them over. It was... Listen. They need natural consequences. At the end of the year, Jonathan came to me and he said, Mr. Miller, I promise I did not throw one more eraser. A prompt, okay? But I want to know, what would you have done if I would have? I said, Jonathan. He said, no, I didn't. I wouldn't have dared. He said, I learned my lesson. I said, well, here's what you would have done. Here's what I would have done. You ever hear those giant erasers? Allow for some natural consequences. Be firm and consistent. I don't need to say more than that. Be firm and consistent. Keep the big picture in mind. What are you trying to teach? What are you trying to do with this? Keep the big picture in your head while you're doing this little thing. And you're holding people accountable. Why are you doing it? And then be respectful of these young people. I could tell you a story about that, but I'm not going to because I'm out of time. And then don't take things personally when you're holding students, children, young people, kids club accountable. Don't take it personally. Don't. And I just want to say, provide plenty of positive reinforcement and encouragement. Young people are a gift from God. They offer hope and joy. They're the hope of the future. And they're in a very challenging time. Let's love up on them. Let's love up on them and grow them for eternity. Thank you. Turn the time back over.
Thank you, Gerald. A lot of good stuff there. Okay, I just have a few announcements before you're dismissed here. The ministry focus presentations will begin at 12 and start every half hour through 1:30. You may attend as many as you wish. The ministry displays will be open from 12 to 2. Lunch is available in the gym at 11:45 through 1:45. Not everyone can be seated at once, so we suggest that some people eat lunch at 11:30, some at 12, and then some at 12:30, and some at 1. So kind of space it out there. After you've eaten, make sure that you put your trash in the trash can so others can be seated at your table. The afternoon general session will begin at 2 o'clock in the auditorium, so please make sure to be prompt in that. You are dismissed.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.